Welcome to The Art of Growth, where we use the Enneagram and the best tools we can find to help you transform. Today, we are talking about overcoming self-consciousness because it gets in the way of our true values and we want to overcome it. But before we get into that, I wanted to remind you that theartofgrowth.org is the hub of all of our work. If you are new to the Enneagram and still trying to figure out your type, the best way to discover it is by scheduling a discovery session, which includes an Enneagram typing interview and some coaching from either Joel or I. We do have a free online Enneagram test on our site, but it is much better to get to the root of personality development when discussing and being observed by a person. So you can schedule those on our website. You can also reach out to us there to begin a conversation about what it would look like to bring the Enneagram into your workplace, to have better interactions on your team and in your organization. But for now, let's go ahead and jump in. Joel and I talking about overcoming self-consciousness. All right, Joel, share the thoughts on your mind. Take us in.
So self-consciousness, it seems to be a problem in our lives. I run into this a lot. Folks will tell me, I've got to do this presentation, and it's in front of people. And then they talk about what's going on in their minds. They'll even tell me what they're going to say. And a lot of what I'm picking up on as I'm coaching them is the self-consciousness, the sort of overthinking my own presentation. What am I going to say? How do I look? What are the people going to hear? And but it's less so about them than it is about themselves.
Yeah.
How do I look? How do I sound? Feeling less than, maybe feeling intimidated, feeling all these things are creating so much of this self-consciousness.
Yeah.
It happens on interviews for jobs. It happens on dates when people go out. I mean, it happens everywhere and all the time, right? It's and it ruins the best of who people really are, I think. I'm sure in the music world, when you were training musicians, you'd probably run into that, where there was like the overthinking the part, overthinking the what they were supposed to do with the guitar, the piano, whatever.
Sure.
And you had to coach them into kind of like get into the moment, get out of that space.
Yeah. I mean, I had to learn it myself. Like,
yeah.
Well, because this is the thing is when you're in any kind of situation, there's only so many things you can pay attention to. And so I think a lot of people don't execute the thing that they want to execute on, whether it be speaking in front of people, playing music in front of people, being on a date, having an interview, having a conversation, because so much of the attention to do really well being on the other person in the present moment gets all internalized. And I remember having those moments on stage or in a conversation or whatever the case may be, where I'm thinking so much about what I'm doing and how am I doing?
Yeah.
So am I doing well? Did I just mess that up? Oh, I did just mess that up. So now, like, how can I recover from this? And what do I do now? And all the time you're actually trying to do the thing as well.
Yeah.
And yes, this sort of the pull of our attention from that internal and all of the internal questions to the external and the thing we actually want to be a part of. So yes, yeah. I know that tension well.
In that space, so this is really cool because there is something about the we. We've often talked about the me and the we.
Yeah.
Self-consciousness puts you completely in the me. But what you're trying to get at the best, and we've had these moments, where it's like, I just had fun. Now, you ever have a moment where it's like, I just had fun doing this thing, whatever it was, a presentation, a date, a conversation with friends, new people that you were hanging out with, and you were not self-conscious, and you just had fun, you just engaged, and it went well, and you weren't even aware of your own techniques, like the things you might play off of, because that's your, you know, your thing when you show up at these events. You didn't do that, and yet it went incredibly well. Because there is this we dynamic, something happening in the space between us and how we are working off of each other that creates this dynamic. And it's much more of a dance than it is of a performance, I think. It's much more of this like partnering up and give and take and flow between you and, say, the interviewer, you and the, you know, the audience.
I think that's why we actually connect or disconnect from someone on stage. When we watch someone on stage, we can feel when they are trying, when they are trying to get you to like a thing, versus when they are, hey, we are doing this together. This is a shared thing between audience and band is all one thing. Speaker and crowd is all, we are one thing having one experience together. And it's amazing. It's an us. But then sometimes you watch people and you go, especially when they're first starting out, like you watch someone get up and speak for the first time and you're like, oh man, they're not with me.
Yeah. Yeah.
The whole time I can see they're questioning themselves.
Yeah.
I heard it actually once on American Idol. Someone sang, and I think it was Randy's response. He's like, man, it was like I could hear you thinking.
That's such a great line.
I
can hear you thinking.
I can you thinking. And I was like, that is amazing.
Yeah. Yeah.
That is so often what I feel like I'm watching.
Yeah.
I'm like watching you, but you're not with me. You are in your own thing worrying about you.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
You've learned the craft.
Yeah.
But you didn't learn the crowd. And this is what's so fascinating, because same thing. So American Idol or the other reality, you know, music shows like that, you'll hear this incredible performance, like pitch perfect.
Sure.
Everything is like, but then somebody else will get up and they're not, but they're so darn likable.
Yeah.
And somehow
they pull you in.
Yeah.
You're like,
oh,
I'm with this person.
Yeah.
Yes.
And I watched this happen on one a couple of years ago, maybe it was. And this dude went all the way through and he won the whole thing. And I thought every single time it came to a vote, he'd be voted out because everybody else, like the ones he was competing, they were better.
They were better.
I thought they were better. But the audience loved this dude because he was having so much fun and you could so see he was not self-conscious. He was just enjoying the moment.
Yeah.
It was all gratitude. And this to me was like, oh, there's a few tips I think we can learn in terms of how do you shift out of that.
Yeah.
Because it is difficult to, you know, when you're deep into that self-conscious space, it is almost impossible to get out.
Yes.
You know, but there are other spaces where you're like, I could be self-conscious, but I have a little bit of ability to move out of that. And that's to the area that I want to speak to. I can't really speak to when you're so stuck in your head, self-conscious, anxious, nervous, how to get out of that. I just don't think you can in that moment.
Yeah.
I think leading up to it, there's some practices you can do to get out. But most of us live in that space of it's kind of 50-50. I'm pulled really strongly into it, but I also could do something different. I just don't know what else to do to kind of consistently be more in that other realm.
And for a lot of people, it just comes to the amount of time you spend doing it. Like people who spend a lot of time on stage, they get used to the, hey, we're doing this together. We're just in this together. I remember for me, it started, I can't remember if I was a teenager or in my early 20s. And you have that moment where you meet someone, you walk up and you shake their hand and you're like, hi, I'm Jim. And they're like, hi, I'm so, and that internal self-consciousness of like, what are they thinking of me?
Yeah.
And then one day it just dawned on me, oh, they're wondering the same thing?
Yeah.
Like they're wondering, what does he think of me?
Yeah.
So it just gave me this permission or freedom to just say, oh, I can focus on them.
Yeah.
I can be with them in that moment. I can give my body language, my attention toward them. And then I'm not so much even thinking about me. I turn the attention on them, and then I'm so much more free in this moment.
Yeah.
And I think for me, it needed to start in that interpersonal thing, and then it expanded to the stage, and it expanded to all of these other realms where, like right now, we're having this conversation. I'm interested in the topic, but I'm not thinking about, oh my gosh, how are all these people who listen to our podcast going to receive it? Like, that's not really in my consciousness, because I'm like, oh, this is a fascinating conversation, and I know I've had some experiences in this realm that could be helpful to people. Like that's where the energy is for me. yeah. as we talk about it. So, yeah.
So a couple things I think have been really fascinating for me is how to move out of that space. One of them was you told me, Joel, when you present, there are times where I feel like you're at people instead of with people.
Mm.
And that helped me to tune into that, okay, right, with is a different, it's a different attitude, it's a different spirit. So it helped me to get out of where my own head, my own self-consciousness, my own irritation, my own frustrations, whatever was happening at the time, to then engage more with folks.
Yeah.
And since then, I've done far less preparation than I ever have for anything that I do. On one hand. On the other hand, I think the kind of preparation I do
yes.
is different. And yes. that and I do put a lot of work into, but it's a different kind of preparation. And it does involve in part like, where am I at? Where's my head at?
Yeah.
You know, am I thinking too much about what I'm going to say, what I'm going to do? And then how can I move into where are they at? Just like you were talking about when you meet somebody that you've, you know, you're meeting for the first time. You're wanting to move towards them and not stay in your own, like, space. So imagine you, like, you get a bubble and you're in your bubble and it's like, I've got to traverse across this space between us, which is a little scary space, you know, and you got to move into there near them. I remember when, I think it was when I first met Suzanne. So she's not with us today. But
she's up in Maine.
Yeah,
swimming doing this thing of swimming in the river.
Family stuff.
Yeah.
I was nervous about meeting her because I'd heard so many incredible things about who she was and what she did. And so, but I sent an email. We were like, we're meeting at a coffee shop. So I said, now I did this on purpose. This is like stealing something from Brené Brown, but doing it in a bit of a different way. I was like, so I'm the handsomest bald dude in the room, so just come find me. And I just did that as a way to kind of like break the ice.
It's a seven charm right there.
Totally. Like, so she's, she found me, of course. But it was a way for me to kind of break that awkwardness that might exist where I would be in my weird space and she'd be in her weird space.
Right.
If she would, I don't know. But that was a way to kind of get across that because it's an awareness of, I'm going to be self-conscious. Why don't I just, you know, do that? Brené Brown would talk about, like, when she gets on stage, like, how does she look? And she might make a joke about that. She might actually just put it out there.
Yeah.
As a way to just kind of put everybody at ease. And what it does is it causes everybody to sort of get out of their little bubbles and into the larger kind of, hey, we're in this together.
Because when we humanize ourselves, we actually humanize each other.
Yes.
So when she gets up and does that, and Brené Brown, I think, is a master of that, she'll just so humanize herself. And sometimes some of us don't want to do that because they're like, is this going to lower me in the eyes of others?
Oh, totally.
And so there's a concern. That's the self-consciousness piece. But it's not. When we humanize ourselves, we humanize each other. And it opens the door for the more of that welcomeness. And yeah, I like how you referred to that. We had that conversation about how sometimes some of us communicate and it comes at another and then shifting that energy to the with. And I was just speaking to a group of sober people, and I always recommend if anyone's struggling with getting sober, check out the Luckiest Club. And it's like a support club for people who are, you know, trying to move through sobriety. And I was speaking to their leaders and I was talking about this kind of energy that often we're self-conscious or we're in our default, what the Enneagram calls stances, and we won't get real deep into this, but there's that with energy, being with someone, that's the energy of breakthrough. With is the energy of breakthrough. In the Enneagram, they traditionally have, you know, the three, type three, type seven, and type eight are this against energy, or you could call it at energy. And then you have those who move toward, which is the one, two, and the six, which move towards others. And then you have the four, five, and nine, which they call withdrawing types. They move away. And I think it's interesting because the four I see is moving like toward and away. Kind of they've got the push and the pull.
Yeah.
But all of those, I think the response is with. Can I be with this other
that
person?
That is 100%. That is the single key for every type is exactly what you just said there.
Yeah. To be with.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And I often think about the Thich Nhat Hanh, the teacher, where he has said he has this internal mantra whenever he meets someone, and it can be a political dignitary or a homeless person on the street. And he has this phrase that he kind of says to himself as he's meeting them, which is, I'm here for you, darling.
Mm.
I'm here for you, darling. And so he's with in that moment. And that is going to disempower the self-conscious side of ourselves.
Yeah.
Because we're not living in ego. We're not living at. We're not living toward where I have to meet you and I have to come towards you. And we're not moving away or withdrawing.
Yeah.
It's, I'm right here. I'm here with you, darling.
Yeah.
And I love that.
Absolutely beautiful. This moves us into the much more into the heart space. But in the heart space, that's not as much self-conscious. It's more aware of the others. And it moves us into play, into a space of play as well. Like you notice kids that when they're playing, they're not self-conscious. When you're playing, you're not really self-conscious. You're just having fun. So mixing those two for me, I was thinking about this as I was talking to a client today about an issue this client was having with a parent, where the parent doesn't like something that this child is doing. Mm. And it's an adult child, but still, it's like, I don't like what you're doing, and I wish you would do something different. And so I modeled for her how to communicate with her mom. And I said, the disposition, imagine taking the disposition of instead of it being so focused on you, you know, and again, like, what am I doing wrong? Or, you know, I don't want to come off this way. It's, I love you, mom, and you're going to love me, and we're going to work through this. And I said, when you imagine the disposition, because you've met these people, that they literally are like, oh, you're going to like me. I'm going to win you over. It's like, it's hard to resist, isn't it?
Right, yeah.
Like, how do you resist somebody who just is like that?
Yeah.
Okay with themselves?
Yeah.
Even if they're not, they're like, I'm insisting on the heart space. I'm insisting on connection. I'm insisting on withness.
Yeah, that's super fun. Yeah, because you want to be around that kind of energy.
You do.
Yeah, self-conscious energy. When someone, you're talking to someone and you know they're constantly questioning, what does this person think of me? Or I just said this and that probably sounded stupid. And they're like creating the interpretation of your interaction.
Yeah.
It's really off-putting because then you're like, oh, how do I edit myself?
Yeah.
So I don't put them off or I don't make them question. So how can I be so clear that I don't make them feel more self-conscious? And then you're getting more self-conscious because of that. And it's you really end up at this impasse where, like, can anyone say anything that's not going to be interpreted, misinterpreted, reinterpreted in a way that doesn't feel connection-wise? It feels like we're always on the edge of breaking connection in that
case. Yes. Yes. Yeah, you really have to like flip the script, and you have to believe the truth that is there. Because there's a lie and a truth. A lie is that I am not lovable. The lie is that I don't belong. The lie is that these are all the lies that we have plenty to confirm. Our brain knows how to do that, right? It takes these stories. It's like, well, there it is, you know.
Yeah.
And we have to believe the truth. No, I'm already connected. I'm already loved. I already belong. And that's a tough thing to do, but imagine walking into some situation where you know you're going to be more self-conscious. You can begin practicing, like, I already belong, I'm already loved, and I'm going to act like that's true.
Mm.
So in this conversation with a young man who was talking about some of his problems with relationships and wanting to connect more deeply, but really having a hard time. And he says, you know, I don't know. And then he starts saying to me, am I talking too much? And I said, no. And I barked at him. He's someone I know really well. So I said, I looked at him and I said, no. If you are, I'll tell you. And he's like, I just wanted to make sure. And I says, yeah, and you're questioning even if that's true, and you can't. If I tell you that it's okay,
right.
Act like it is. Act like it is. I'm not saying you have to believe it, because your head is going to do all kinds of screwy things on you.
Mm-hmm.
You just got to act like it's true. And then you'll see that the reality starts to shape itself around what you act out that you believe is that you're wanting to be true. Whatever it is you want to be true in this world, you have to act like it is, and then that manifests and it becomes real for you. You know, but
and that story reminded me how many different forms that self-consciousness can take. On how some people are like, "Am I taking up too much space?"
Yeah.
And other people are like, am I taking up enough, or am I am I keeping myself too quiet? Like, it, how opposite ends, because self-consciousness can come in any form. It's actually knowing your form of self-consciousness. And then can you observe the energy of your own self-consciousness and then convert that into a, okay, now how do I return to the with?
Yeah.
How do I return to being in the space between us and not retreating back into just my own space of myself and all my concerns and self-consciousness, or projecting that self-consciousness and go totally into you, and how do I adjust myself so that I can make you? Because that's not with either.
Right.
But returning to the space between, because it is the space between that is with.
Yeah. Oh boy, that's good. That is really, really good, because that hits on the all three triads there. That, you know, temptations are really difficult for heart types to, like, not cross that bridge all the way to the other island. I describe it as the island, you know, two individuals are islands, and then the relationship is the bridge. And some heart types will cross all the way over the other side of the bridge just to, like, I'll help you like me. I'll help you be in relationship with me. And like, I love that, staying in the space between. That's with energy. It's like not over responsible, but not pulling away.
And saying, you have to come over here.
You have to come over here.
You have to come to where I am. And it's natural when a relationship's been going on for a while that one person will cross further at certain points in time. But there's this term that's coming up a lot in couples therapy right now, where they talk about emotional labor. Like, is one person doing too much of the emotional labor in the relationship?
Mm.
Is one person always crossing the entire bridge to the other island?
Yeah.
Or are you actually sharing some of that responsibility? Because when I see someone who's always crossing all the way, I think of that as like, well, that's that toward energy. It's I always have to come toward you.
Yeah.
Or I have to, like, pull back and just say, are you going to, you know, kind of come to me? Or this is what you need to do. And we can get lost in any of those, but returning to the with, once again, over and over, returning to the with. And that is when you see someone on stage who is not self-conscious, because they are no longer saying, look at me up here. They're saying, hey, haven't we all felt this way before? Like, we're singing the song, or haven't we all felt this way? I remember, I think it was John Mayer saying, you know, when I first started writing these songs, I was just putting the question out there, have you ever felt this way?
Hmm.
And I saw him giving a talk at Berkeley to songwriters. So someone asked the question. They said, you know, how do you break into the business? And they're asking all these, like, logistical, how do you get into the business thing? And he just cut them off. He's like, great songs, just great songs. And they're like, okay, what does that mean? And he says, if you write a song, and I don't just mean one with all of its body parts, but you write a real song, you'll have people down the block. And this is what caught me. He said, some of them will have business cards and some of them bad weeks, but they'll all be lined up. And if it was one of those two things, he's like, if you write it in a song, because I was like, that is with energy.
Mm.
Have we ever felt this way?
Yeah.
Have we had this shared experience?
Yeah.
A friend of mine was on tour with a band called 21 Pilots, and he was talking to them about this very thing. They're like, he's like asking them how they kind of got to where they were. And they're like, man, we never thought about that.
Mm.
We never tried to do that. We just showed up and we wanted to make a connection in the room. Wherever we went, we just got up on stage and we wanted to make a connection. And someone who gets on stage wanting to perform will never succeed in performing to the same extent that someone who gets up and wants to make a connection will.
Mm, that's beautiful. That's really, really well said. So good. I think of how it starts sometimes. You have to start sometimes in the self-conscious space.
Yeah.
Because it's your starting point. And then surface that and choose to be vulnerable to enter in. Because I could imagine, like what you just described, John Mayer, having those questions but never voicing them. And then those questions would cause him to return to himself a lot, try to, like, these are my questions, these are my struggles in life, these are my... Right. And then that just keeps you in your own little bubble. But once you put that out there, oftentimes people are like, oh, yeah, Been there.
So return to the with. That's what we want to come back to, is that return to the with. Because the with energy is the energy of breakthrough, and it's the energy of connection. And that will always take you further than performance or show or trying too hard or anything else. Like, that'll be the thing that actually makes the connection, is when we are with someone. So thanks for listening. We hope that was helpful, because that is what we are always trying to be. So if you are new to the Enneagram and you want to know what the next steps are, we have a new offering on our website, which is a short video series called Next Steps. This is a very introductory process to knowing what to do with your type once you've discovered it. And that is under the classes and events part of our website. Make sure you are subscribed so you don't miss anything. And if you leave us a review on iTunes, it really helps people find the show. Because of algorithms, it is more help than you know. But for now, my friends, for this week, may you tune into your own heart and to the heart of the others around you. May you celebrate and dance in the energy between the two of you. May it not always push towards them or always pull towards yourself, but may you move and thrive in the space between, because that space is expansive and divine. Have a great week, my friends. Grace and growth.